As I mentioned at the top of the show, I took a little video of a hike that I made up at what used to be called Fort Sheridan. Part of it is still called Fort Sheridan. It's pretty complicated, actually, when you think about it. But the good thing is that part of this rare ecosystem along Lake Michigan is being saved, is being restored, and it's going to be a chance. It's almost like a science experiment. And the people you can thank for that is Openlands and the folks associated with Openlands. In the studio right now, I have Amy Collins, Openlands Lakeshore Preserve site manager. She was with me on the hike. You'll see her in that little YouTube video that I've got up there. And I'm also very, very pleased and excited to have Jerry Adelman, who is the Openlands president and CEO, here in the studio. And I don't know why I haven't done this before, Jerry.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here. You have a great show.
Well, thank
you. Incredible voice for conservation and the environment, you know, throughout our region.
I'm going to ask you to pull that mic down just a tad.
Sure. How's
there
that?
We, that's
that
much better. Yeah. Well, you know, okay, I wasn't necessarily going to start this way, but I will, because I suspect. And by the way, if anybody wants to talk about this and they live up in that area and have seen some of the restoration work going on, 773-838-9278, call and talk to Jerry Adelman, who is president and CEO of Openlands. For people in the biz, that's me and you and environmentalists and conservationists. Openlands is a big deal, and you're a big deal, okay? And I know you're going to blush, all right? But I'm excited to have you on, and I should have done this years ago. But for people outside of the biz, maybe not so much. And I don't mean that in a derogatory way. I mean, I get the feeling that you really don't care. You just go about doing your business, and Openlands gets things done. And I think that's one of the hallmarks of the organization. And it's protecting our environment and doing so many different things, like tree keepers, for example. I'm a tree keeper, number 417.
Hey.
All right.
Reporting for duty, sir.
20 years old this year, the program.
I know. And it's an amazing program that teaches people how to take care of the urban forest. And you have done so many different things, and we'll talk about some of them. But what do you think about that?
No, I think you're really accurate, Mike. I mean, we are a regional land conservation group. We've been around almost 50 years. We're a pioneer nationally. Back in 1963, when we were formed, you know, conservation was seen as, you know, focus for rural landscapes, wilderness, not big cities, suburbs, exurban fringe. And so we've always been connecting people to the land and thinking about that web of green that ties our extraordinary three-state region together, from mm-hmm. inner city, you know, community gardens to the urban forest to trails and greenways, or large landscape scale preserves like the Madewin Tallgrass Prairie.
Which is awesome.
It is.
And I talk to people about that. It is one of those places that just puts chills up your spine for several reasons. Because you go out to Madewin, you see the immediate past, which is the military. And again, here's the common thread between that
right.
and Fort Sheridan. Sheridan is the military connection.
Yeah.
And you go and you see what's left of the military facilities there. And that gives you goosebumps because you think of our military might. But then you also see the future, which is the past, which is prairie.
Bringing prairie back to the prairie state. I mean, less than you know, 0.1% of the original prairie survives in Illinois, the prairie state. And here at that scale, I mean, 19,000 acres, not
it's
all of
huge.
Which is prairie,
it's
huge.
Yeah.
So it's an exciting opportunity. So we've done a lot as a catalyst, as a leader, as a land purchaser, as a coalition builder, advocate. But with one exception, we don't own and manage it. Our name isn't on it. So when you go on the Illinois Prairie Path, the first example of a rail-to-trail conversion in the country, or you visit Madewin, you know, the first National Tallgrass Prairie, or hike down the I&M Canal, the National Heritage Corridor, the first of these heritage areas that are now 50 around the country, on and on, you are at sites that open land shaped one way or another, either directly or with many partners, but our name's not on it. And that's fine, quite frankly, you know, because the important thing is that on the ground, we have this extraordinary network of important open spaces, natural areas, recreational resources that people benefit from.
But how does that come about that you do all this work and you don't necessarily want to have the plaque with the open land's name on it.
Well, I think we'd like to maybe get our name out there a little more. Obviously, it's kind of important, you know, in this environment especially. Yeah. But I guess the real test is, you know, have we been successful in protecting these extraordinary resources? You know, one of our founders, George Overton, who was an amazing guy, who cared very much about social justice issues as he did the environment. And so for him, access to nature for all people who live in this region was really important. But he said many times, he said, Jerry, you know, you have to save a site at least two or three times. You know, there are threats, there are issues. And so if you don't have that constituency, that's what really matters, is on the ground, people who are connected, volunteers, tree keepers, volunteer stewards who are out there, you know, restoring our prairies and forested areas, people who go to the public hearing, then you're not going to succeed. And I think that we and our partners in the conservation community have been successful in generating a great deal of grassroots support. So that's really the most important thing. And would we like our name better known? Oh, sure. Of course we would. But and you're helping.
Well, that's why you're on the show. I do want to spread the word about open lands. One great partner of yours is Scott Jameson.
Definitely.
And he just tweeted... He said, open land, yeah, you got to love the modern technology, don't you?
Really, this I tell you.
It's just awesome. He says, open lands is the voice and action for conservation and urban trees. So well, he's a tree guy, you know.
Is he a tree guy? Not only is he a board member, actually, of open lands, but he has been on the faculty, as you know, of our tree keeper program from its inception. And so the kind of volunteer commitment that he makes is extraordinary. And this program, Tree Keepers, you know, you're what number? Four?
417.
417. We now have almost 1,300 people who have gone through this. Seven classes, 3 hours each, you know, learning all about trees from, you know, physiology to tree planting to pruning, mulching, diseases, where to go for help. Every weekend we have work days. But the most important thing is that people are connected to the urban forest. They recognize the values of trees in our urban setting, the multiple benefits that they provide. And now with a new mayor coming in, you know, it's going to be an interesting transition.
Well,
and
yeah.
We hope that we've got a constituency now. We have people from all walks of life, from every neighborhood in the city, who are tree keepers. In fact, we just got a call about 3 months ago from Canberra, Australia. They were researching volunteer, you know, urban forestry stewardship programs where citizens really get involved in caring for the urban forest, which is collectively all the trees that we have in our parkways and parks and, you know, public spaces. And they said, you know, Tree Keepers is the best program and we want to model ours after yours. So we had a long conversation, sent them material and so forth. But it really has become a national and to some extent international model. But the true test is now. Will that voice be heard? Are we going to be able to maintain the extraordinary momentum that we've experienced under the Daley administration?
Well, you and I sat across the table from each other in several meetings at the end of last year when we put together the Green Growth Platform among various conservation and environmental groups in the city. I have to admit, what we were doing, I thought was really important. The way it turned out, not so much in my own mind, because I wanted to talk about the effect it had. I'm not sure it had any effect, which is a little disappointing. I'm glad we did what we did because, for one thing, it quantified the kinds of issues that we need to see results in from. All right, so we had environmentalists from the area sit down, and at least we put it all on paper. Did it affect the candidates? Well, they all pretty much said, yeah, we'll do this, we'll do this, we'll do this. And some expounded on it and others didn't. And at the end of the day, I don't think it had a lot of effect on the race.
Well, it may not have had a major effect on the race, but I'm more optimistic about the future. I mean, the real work
Well, wait, you got to understand, you're an optimist, and I'm the opposite direction.
Okay. Well, this is healthy. You know, you got that yin-yang kind of thing going. But, I mean, the real test is what kind of agenda will Mayor-elect Emanuel develop? Mm-hmm. And he's just, you know, announced the leaders of his transition team. Committees are going to be established in the next week or two. That blueprint is there. I was fortunate to be with a number of conservation leaders who met with Rahm Emanuel a couple weeks ago.
See, I was going to ask, when did you meet with them? Because I figured you had to have already met with Rahm Emanuel.
Well, with you know, about 10 or 12 others, you know. But we had a very productive discussion. And I was very pleased to hear you know, what his vision is. And again, just shorthand, and but he referenced the Burnham Plan, for instance,
mm-hmm.
and the amazing signature resource brand that our lakefront offers.
Mm-hmm.
He focused on the river. So he said water is going to be really important.
Yes,
he referenced Northerly Island. The Bloomingdale Trail is a high priority. He said he already spoke to Secretary LaHood about, you know, trying to get some resources to make that happen. I mean, he said a lot of good things. And so I think
it shows that he's aware of these
exactly,
issues.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, and are these his highest priorities? Well, probably not, given the economy and mm-hmm. challenges with education and crime and whatever. But clearly it's on the radar screen. And I was impressed with his observations.
Well, that's what I want to hear, I'm hoping. You know, and as president of the Chicago Recycling Coalition, I hope that I get to talk to him, too, about where he's going with that. Although, you know, from what I know, there are going to be things done before the end of the Daley administration. They put bids out there, and they've accepted bids. And even before Rahm takes office, I have a feeling that things will be set in motion. Some things will be set in motion regarding recycling, though it's not going to be finished.
But good things. So at least there's positive
movement on it. You know, and how thorough it will be is anybody's guess at this point.
Sure, sure.
That's Jerry Adelman, who is the CEO and president of Openlands. And again, you're welcome to call and comment if you want, 773-838-9278. Also in the room, Amy. I want to get you involved because this is where we make that that turn towards the Openlands Lakeshore Preserve. And Amy, thank you so much for accompanying me on the tour of it this past Thursday.
No problem. It was a pleasure.
It's an awesome space, and you must be very proud to be the site manager.
I certainly am. I loved the site the first time I saw it, and that grows deeper every day I'm out there.
So give me a little bit about your background.
I have a background in environmental studies and came to Openlands last April as the site manager. So you'll see me out on site communicating with our visitors, handling maintenance issues, education programs, and things like that.
And I alluded to this earlier that it's actually a pretty complex situation, but this seems to be the sort of thing that Openlands thrives on, where you have different municipalities and you have government agencies and you have forest preserves and park preserve park districts, and you bring everybody to the table and you say, okay, this is how this is going to happen. And this is a situation where the base Fort Sheridan was decommissioned back in the early 90s, and suddenly there was this land that could have just as easily been snapped up by developers. It could be wall-to-wall condos up there right now. And the fact that it isn't is a testimony to what you've done with wow. Openlands. I'm kind of curious, whose radar screen, I mean, whose alarm bell started going off at that point to say, we have to save this?
Well, Mike, let me just put it in perspective very quickly here. But when we went back to the early minutes of Openlands, you know, the organization when it was first formed, fledgling group, civic leaders, conservationists coming together, they had several things that they singled out. They said, we've got to watch. One was the Joliet Arsenal. They said it's the largest piece of undeveloped property in the metropolitan region. And Fort Sheridan. They said, someday that fort may be closed. 2 miles of lakefront. Keep our eye on it.
Mm-hmm.
Over the years, we did. And as you referenced, in the early 90s, they announced the closing of the northern part. The southern was transferred largely to the Navy. There's still some Army holdings as well.
Right, and they built affordable housing for Navy.
For the Navy, redevelopment. Yeah. That's the later development here. So mm-hmm. the first part, in the early 90s, Openlands formed a broad coalition. I think it was 15 or 20 different organizations who were concerned about the environment, open space, also historic preservation, because it was a...
That's another thing. You're dealing with historic preservation.
Absolutely.
Not just of land, but of buildings.
Right, right.
They're
fabulous
buildings.
The northern part is a national historic landmark. It's the highest category, as well as a national registered district. So there were all sorts of proposals to have that be a gated community and to redevelop the entire property.
My head would have exploded. Top of my head would just come off.
So we were successful collectively. Again, we led the charge and staffed it, but it was a broad coalition of many different interests, and that's often how we operate. Successful in getting 270-some acres transferred to the Lake County Forest Preserve District. So that was a huge coup. You know, so little of our lakefront outside. We have about 2 or 3 miles of lakefront in Illinois, about half of which is in the city. and all but 4 miles is, you know, open and accessible. Once you leave Chicago and go north, there are small parks, but they tend to be local. You mm-hmm. need a sticker to park in the parking lot. I mean, it's not really a regional resource. Now you get all the way up north and you've got Illinois Beach, and that's fabulous, but it's dune swale topography and ecology, much like Indiana dunes. So this bluff ravine, very special, you know, sort of landscape, most of it's private. So 2 miles, you know, Fort Sheridan, so we can't lose it. So about, what, maybe 4 years ago, Senator Kirk, then Congressman Kirk, turned to us, his district, and he said, you know, we're going to redevelop the southern part now for market rate housing and Navy housing.
Mm-hmm.
And will you work with us to find a public agency to take over the mile of, little over a mile of lakefront, 3 ravines and the bluffs? We said, sure, no problem. And we turned to a variety of players. Everyone was supportive, said, we've got to save this. It's unique, you know, extraordinary resource. But for various reasons, no one was willing, able to take it. So we went back to then, you know, Congressman Kirk and said, we can't find anyone. And he said, well, unless.
Was it a financial problem?
Well, I think. Yes. I mean, because even though the land would be given to the, you know, transferred at no cost, huge costs in terms of restoration, the infrastructure, the programs, ongoing commitment to maintain and manage. I mean, we have, you know, a $12 million capital campaign underway right now. We're at $10 million. So we're getting close, but have ways to go.
Send
so
those
I think
checks
that was
to open lands.
That's a lot of
yeah,
money,
yeah.
though. And we said, well, you know, we've never owned land. We've saved thousands of acres. We've spent millions of dollars. We have revolving loan funds. We do hold conservation easements in perpetuity on private property, but we don't own and manage property. We've never done it in our history. And he said, well, if you don't do it, then it's a gated community. So we went back to our board, and they said, we got to do it. It's been an extraordinary experience. We're so lucky to have Amy. She's just done a wonderful job, and the passion and enthusiasm and talent that she brings. And you, of course, were there with Bob, our chief operating officer who directs our land.
Bob McKeer, who just has the world's most unspellable last name.
I know. But what a great guy. We were so fortunate to
he's
have
wonderful.
Him with your organization.
You'll see him in that YouTube video. That he's the guy doing all the talking.
You
as
did
we
a nice job with that. So anyway, that's how that came about, and we just said we have to do it. And so we're doing it. And it's been an amazing experience. And as you know, we see it as a learning experience, a learning landscape. I mean, learning on many levels, how to do restoration of these rare ecosystems that we know little about, the ravines. It's kind of the last frontier of restoration ecology.
And I think people, and again, this is one of those things that most people are unaware of. They say, well, it's a lakeshore, it's a lakeshore. What a, you know, but this is a place where a glacier dumped off, you know, created bluffs and dumped a lot of material. And there are ravines and where there aren't in many places along the lake. And this is an ecosystem that is among the rarest in the world.
Exactly.
Yes.
And Amy, how many threatened and endangered plants have we identified to date?
To date, we've identified 6 state endangered or threatened plant species. 4 of those are found on the beach, and 2 of them are found on the lakeshore bluff. So it's a very specific ecosystem that they inhabit, and to be able to preserve the 2-mile stretch is very significant in Illinois.
And of course, you know, as habitat, I mean, here we are on this migratory route, and we've identified over 100 species of birds to date, and still
mm-hmm.
counting.
Yes.
We have many partners helping us, too, like Audubon, for instance, doing counts and so forth. From a natural resource point of view, it's amazing. But from an educational point of view, what an opportunity. And so, you know, we're working with 20-some schools, developing model curriculum. And then in terms of site interpretation, you saw some of the early artwork, the mural and the poles.
There's
and more
a
will be
fabulous
going in.
Mural on an overpass there, and I have photos of it on my website, mikenovak.net, and you can see the overpass. And then I did a close-up on the trillium and the ants.
Isn't that spectacular?
It's great.
Kind of this microcosm, yeah. You know, macrocosm, whatever, dealing with all these scales. And it's really a powerful piece.
By the way, that is the CEO and president of Openlands, Jerry Adelman. He's in studio with me. And Amy Collins, who's the Lakeshore Preserve site manager. We're talking about preserving that land. And the number, if folks want to call in, they'll call 773-838-9278. If they don't, I get to have a conversation all by myself here. This is fine. This is absolutely fine with me. So, you're at the point now up there. Well, it's still developing because
right.
One of the things that Amy showed me is a ravine where you're going to put a bridge across. And I looked at it and I said, this is going to happen by the end of this year?
We have our fingers crossed.
So everything has to go right for that
Yes, yes.
Because you're creating trails.
It will.
Yeah. Well, what's interesting about you have these three ravines that you are going to be protecting. One of them has a road down the middle of it. And as Bob McKeer explained to me, that's not such a bad thing because it makes it accessible.
Right.
Yes.
And accessibility, as Bob told you, you know, is one of our real anchor, you know, kind of goals here, accessibility at all levels for all people.
Mm-hmm.
And so, for instance, the Upland Trail will be fully accessible to people with disabilities. You know, we've been working with the Rehabilitation Institute, getting insights into what does that really mean, not just the ADA, you know, minimum requirements, but
right.
where do you have benches and what about signage and so forth. And that road, I mean, we wouldn't put a road down a ravine, but it's been there for over 100 years. Probably part of the original plan, we think.
And Bob tells me that, to some degree, it stabilizes the land.
It saved that ravine mm-hmm. in terms of the plant communities, which is, isn't that right, Amy?
That's correct. It's in much better, Bartlett Ravine is the ravine with the road down it, and it's in much better shape than a lot of the other ravines, both on the site and in private ownership, because of that road holding the soil down.
Well, and part of the problem is what we do with the water and the
exactly.
way the water's been directed, and you know, nature has one way of doing it, but then when we start putting in sewers and say, well, let's just throw it down the ravine, then it starts washing away things.
Yes.
And we probably have a better handle than any of the other ravine sites on that water issue because we've done extensive studies, you know, on drainage within that kind of ravine watershed to try to understand where's all this water coming from, where is it going, how do you manage it, how do you keep it on site?
Well, that brings you to the other jurisdictions there. You've got the town of Fort Sheridan, you've got the Forest District, Forest Preserve,
yep.
you've got the Army, you've got the Navy, and they're all draining and they're doing things. I mean, the Navy's setting up all this housing, and as you mentioned, there's private housing as well. You all have to cooperate.
We do.
And
again,
how do you do that? How does it get done?
You know, it's just like this, getting people around a table and talking things through and sharing information and building a level of trust and understanding. It's kind of how we operate as an organization because there's so many units of local government in northeastern Illinois. And then when you expand to the broader Chicago Wilderness region that takes in, you know, parts of Indiana, Wisconsin, even all the way up to Berrien County, Michigan, lots of players. But our natural resources, I mean, a river stream doesn't respect political boundaries, you know. A watershed sure doesn't. And
just,
so we're trying
to ask the Colorado River when it gets, when it gets to Mexico and
exactly.
it's a trickle, you know.
Yeah, so it's just kind of how we do our work. When we did our greenways and trail plan with then NPSI, CMAP now, Chicago Metropolitan Agency for Planning, or the Water Trails Plan or whatever, you've got to have everybody voluntarily buy in. And so this is a microcosm of the bigger region. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes it gets a little rocky, just like a family. You know, sometimes you get a little dysfunctional. But in the big picture, I think people value what we're trying to do. They see the benefit to people who live near it, adjacent to it, and to the broader metropolitan area.
Well, this has to increase property values, I would think, if you're living near this wonderful,
yeah.
unique ecosystem.
Right. Which I think is one of the dimensions, and I know, Mike, we've spoken about this in the past, but in kind of making the case for green infrastructure, for a really wonderful green program like Mayor Daley has developed for the city, is it has economic benefit mm-hmm. and direct impact in terms of quality of life, in terms of the image and brand, in terms of opportunities to access nature and recreation close to where you live. One metropolitan area competing with another around the globe, you know, people are looking at all these different dimensions of urban life. And if you have wonderful parks and trails and natural areas and opportunities to escape to those close to home, it makes a difference. So certainly that's true with a specific site like the preserve as well.
Well, Jerry's, you know, wonking on policy here. But since I have you in the room, Amy, I want to know, I want to geek out on the ecology a little bit,
just
for a couple of minutes here. And what is it that you're looking forward to seeing this year? You've done a lot of restoration. Bob and you showed me where you'd opened up the land. A lot of invasive species were there. You took down a lot of trees because they were shading the ground. And we all know what happens is that you take away that canopy and the natural forbs come back, the seeds sprout and you get stuff. What do you think you're going to see this year that you haven't seen so far?
Well, you know, it's always a surprise every season. What I expect to see is more of what we've seen blooming in the spring. Our trillium was going bonkers last year. I think it's going to be even better this year.
You know, and there are people who try to grow Trillium unsuccessfully who are just going to, well, you know, the idea is just have a natural area, I suppose.
Yeah. I think that we'll just continue to see more abundance. And as we keep doing research, such as the project we did monitoring species with the Chicago Botanic Garden last year, mm-hmm. we'll continue to come across, hopefully, new species that we haven't realized were there before. One example is we have a northern boreal blackberry that grows in there.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to be able to find it. I haven't been able to find it yet.
Well, wait, how do you know it's there or it's supposed to be?
It was in another survey that was done by an independent researcher a few years ago. It's mentioned in the report, but I have not been able to track down its location.
Well, how many acres are you dealing with and trying to track it down?
It's about 77 acres, so I have my work cut out for
yeah,
me.
Yeah, you do. and not only that, it's 77 acres, and much of it is 45-degree angle.
Exactly.
Yes,
it's very steep
and
out there.
Yeah.
Which is one of the things I think that is a draw about the preserve. It's such an unusual topographical landscape in Illinois. It's 70 feet up above the lake when you're standing on the edge of the bluff. It's pretty extraordinary.
Well, I would sit here all day talking about this and not be embarrassed at all, just go into the minutia, and yet Open Lands does so many other things. And I also have a time frame here that I have to get to. I think it's funny that the Jerry walks in the door, Jerry Adelman from Open Lands, and first thing he does is he hands me the Open Lands annual report.
Hot off the press.
Hot off
2 days
press.
Ago.
Oh, and look, and right here, look at this.
Yeah, the
mural. There's
yep.
the mural.
Those are the artists, by the way, in the corner there.
They're great. And you've got, and that's one of the things I wanted to compliment you on. You have art in the ravine, and there will be more art, and it's always fun to see that integrated with that kind of space.
And what we're trying to do is kind of pioneer a new nexus between art and conservation or ecology. So it's not a sculpture park, just putting beautiful art there because it's a beautiful setting.
Mm-hmm.
Nor is it purely didactic, you know, where it just... But it's that kind of middle ground where artists are given a lot of freedom, but where the art gives you a point of entry. A way for the general public to connect to this very special place, like those color poles, for instance. Mm-hmm. You know, well, why are there so many colors of blue or the various greens? And hopefully that causes people to look more critically and at detail. And so it's exciting, this art dimension of it, definitely.
I want to get to something else you mentioned, and we got a call, I think, that's coming in. You'll need your headsets to hear that. But you also mentioned that Chicago or at the Chicago Flower and Garden Show, you're going to have a presence.
Right. We have a demonstration garden. The show opens on March 5th. It runs through the 13th. And Culleton Quinn Landscape Architects have been the lead on this, volunteering their talent and expertise and working with all kinds of wonderful contractors and partners, but doing a garden that really focuses on water and how do we keep water, you know, the idea of a rain garden, water barrels. I mean, how do you keep water where it falls? And it's very exciting and I think a wonderful example of green infrastructure at work. And I think it should be quite spectacular.
You know, that is rapidly becoming one of the main focuses of environmental progress, is how we treat water. Looking at the ravine and how what the Army did came in, their idea was, let's get it off the property as fast as possible. And this is not to denigrate the Army. It's just it's the way it's been done, you know. And you pave over the streams, and let's not let it get into the ground. But now we're completely 180-ing that whole thing. And the idea with gardeners is take it off the roof, put it into the ground,
exactly.
Put it back into the aquifer.
It's a precious resource, you know, mm-hmm. and we've treated it basically as a nuisance. As waste.
As waste. No, and that's what I tell you. We've turned it into poison.
Yep.
Yeah, and
yep.
collected pharmaceuticals and oils and chemicals and fertilizer and all that. And then what do? We treat it and we try to clean it up. Well, it'd be better, don't you think, if we didn't do that in the first place?
And Mike, as I think you know, one of the dimensions of Open Lands work is wetlands restoration. And we're doing some massive restoration projects in partnership with Cook County Forest Preserve and Will County Forest Preserve districts. But again, you know, let the natural systems process this. Let's not spend millions of dollars, you know, to treat water that we then send down the Mississippi. You know, it's crazy.
And then create dead zones in the Gulf of Mexico. Let's go to line one. Alan from Lake Bluff, you're on the Mike Novak Show. How you doing?
Fine. I have a question. I've lived in the area, and I'm glad that all I heard was the real estate promotions several years back of it being split up and how wonderful it was going to be, and then that just died and didn't hear anything else in the news, and I'm glad that it's gone back to nature. The question I have, in and around Lake County, there's various little spots of land, and they have parking lots that you can go, and then they have pathways that you can go out and look. All I see when I drive by Fort Sheridan now is this, the gate to the non-gated community access. And I'm wondering, how do you get to this, or is that not in place yet, public access?
Well, if you go to our website, there is information that directs you to Bartlett Ravine. So we had a kind of a very light opening, if you want, you know, last fall.
Because you're still putting this
together. We're putting the infrastructure in. So there'll be a trail system with wonderful overlooks and so forth up on the bluff where construction will begin soon. I mean, it's been laid out forth.
It's a staged opening, and it's still in process.
Right.
That's correct.
But we're anticipating our grand opening September 10th. And so if Amy keeps everyone on task here, we'll be successful in getting all these things done.
And I'll tell you, Alan, when I went there, Amy gave me specific directions. I wouldn't have found the parking lot to Bartlett Ravine if I hadn't known exactly where I was going.
No, it was a real soft opening. It's very, but at least people can use it.
Yes.
And again, by September, though, we'll have all the infrastructure in place and good maps and that kind of thing.
Yeah,
The other thing, and this applies both to you and Mr. Novak, is that well, it's Sunday, but I'm not religious at all. But the spiritual aspect of all this is just heartening. It's just fabulous that people are paying attention. Maybe it's pantheistic, paying attention to the spirits and the beauty of everything else that is not something we made.
You know, that's an excellent point there, Alan. Anybody who listens to my show knows that I'm not a particular fan of organized religion, but that is my religion, that spirituality that you experience in a place like Bartlett Ravine and along the lakefront there.
And I think what you're finding, too, is that even organized religion is recognizing that we are the stewards of this resource, that we are part of nature, and that we have responsibility to take care of it. So, you know, again, if it's a more transcendental, pantheistic sort of approach, or if it's even formal religion, I think throughout the globe we're recognizing that we as humans have the responsibility to care for that.
Alan, great question, great comment. I appreciate you calling the show.
Okay, one last thing, and that is also the aspect, the health aspect. Every time I go out and am in nature, I feel so much better than any amount of drugs or vitamins. And that's just thank you very much for your show, and thank you for putting all these diverse resources that most people just don't know about, and even I don't have access to, but thank you very much.
You're quite welcome, Alan. Thank you so much. And, you know, that's why I do it. I know that as I pointed out, and it brings us full circle to the very first question I asked you. It's like people don't often know who's behind getting these things done. Well, you should know. Openlands.org. Openlands.org. And if you want to find out about Bartlett Ravine, you go to either my website. I got links there. Or you can go to openlands.org. Type in Bartlett Ravine on their search function on the site, and it'll take you to all kinds of pages. There's the history of it. I love it. You've got the ecology. You can find so much information. And we just kind of scratched the surface of open lands here, didn't we, Jerry?
We did, but I think we're fortunate to have you, you know, yes, to kind of broadcast this message. And you have been such a great ambassador for conservation and the environment in general. And thank you for including Open Lands.
Well, I do appreciate having you here schlepping down to the South Side. And I'm coming back out to Bartlett in the spring. Because,
excellent,
because
you want to see those trillium and all the ephemerals.
Oh, yeah. And I want to see the red trillium that Amy, yes, tells me grow only in association with a certain tree.
Yes, they grow around the three, I believe, bur oak trees that we found on the site. And there's the one little patch of red trillium at the base, nowhere else on the site. They have some sort of partnership that we don't quite understand.
And you will figure it out at some point.
At some point.
And then at the end of the season, I'm going to come to see the bridge.
Great. Better have it done.
Because I'm going to walk across it, whether it's ready or not. So it better be ready. Jerry Adelman, Amy Collins, thank you so much. And my thanks to Bob McKeer, who took me on the tour last week. And we'll keep people apprised of this and the progress that you're making during the year.
Well, great. We look forward to future conversations. Thank you, Mike.
All right.
Thank you.